This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, this is Annie, and you're listening to Stuff Mom Never Told You. We are once again joined by my good friend, Samantha. Hello, Samantha.
Annyeong. That's what I said.
Annyeong. And for this, our third episode in our mini-series on trauma in the age of Me Too. And we figured we would do an entire episode on trauma itself. What it looks like, what it feels like, which just makes sense, I think. Our last episode was about grooming and how that leads to abuse. So the next step in that arc of abuse is what comes after, which is often trauma. And we touched on this briefly in our episode around PTSD and CPTSD. These both result from traumas, but oftentimes in our society, we hear about it in terms of soldiers and veterans, not so much about in terms of abuse and sexual assault. And that is not to downplay any type of trauma. It's just to say that we don't hear about trauma in terms of what we're talking about, sexual assault and abuse, that often. Right. And for the trigger warnings for this episode specifically, we're going to be talking about sexual assault, sexual abuse, abuse, self-harming, and suicidal ideation and trauma itself. So if any of those are triggering for you, please take care of yourself and think about yourself before you continue to listen.
Take a minute. Care for yourself.
Exactly. So let's start with some definitions of the different types of trauma. The American Psychological Association, or the APA, defines trauma as, quote, the emotional response someone has to an extremely negative event. Trauma is fairly common and normal in the aftermath of a terrible event or events, but depending on the severity, it can majorly impact a person's life and may require outside help to get back to a healthy state of mind.
And according to Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, trauma is an event, series of events, or sets of circumstances that is experienced by an individual as physically or emotionally harmful or life-threatening and that has lasting adverse effects on the individual's functioning and mental, physical, social, emotional, or spiritual well-being. Trauma has no boundaries with regard to age, gender, socioeconomic status, race, ethnicity, or sexual orientation.
And in an article I was reading before we recorded this from The New Yorker, Juanat Diaz wrote, trauma is a time traveler, an Ouroboros that reaches back and devours everything that came before, Only fragments remain. No one can hide forever. Eventually, what used to hold back the truth doesn't work anymore. You run out of escapes, you run out of exits, you run out of gambits, you run out of luck. Eventually, the past finds you. And I feel like that is such a powerful quote.
I agree. It is. It's true. You can't ignore what has happened. It has to be treated. You have to care about it because it affects your daily life.
Eventually, and I can speak from experience, eventually,
right,
it will come out.
Right.
Trauma can be caused by a lot of things. Aside from the combat soldiers face, there's also domestic violence, rape, natural disasters, severe illness or injury, death of a loved one, neglect in children, separation from a parent, which we're seeing as a result of Trump's family separation at the border, witnessing an act of violence. And it is worth noting, you don't have to be present at a traumatic event to experience trauma, although that is usually the case. It doesn't have to be, which brings us to secondary trauma, which is also sometimes called compassion fatigue. And secondary trauma occurs from witnessing an event, police or school shootings, 9/11 is often brought up, or someone in social work like you are, Samantha, or first responders.
Yeah, it's actually something that really should be monitored, but oftentimes isn't. Communities have actually gotten better with making sure to offer support during major times of crisis, such as a mass shooting or traumatic events. But oftentimes, people such as myself, a social worker, or teachers, first responders, are not given that same consideration on a daily basis. The things that we see, the things that we hear, often affect our relationships, our daily progress, and even just sleep. I know I struggle with that as a DFACS worker. When I say DFACS, Department of Family and Children's Services, I often had trouble sleeping, and it was a constant thing, and we were rarely given any opportunity to rest because, honestly, with that type of field, you don't have time to rest. There's always a crisis.
Yeah, and that's something that we need to take into consideration for jobs like that. We need to think about the health and well-being of the people who are working in those fields, and we often don't. Another thing that is common among social workers like yourself is, or anyone who is dealing with someone who has had trauma, is this secondary thing.
Right. And I will tell you right now, majority of people like myself who are in these types of fields, we have some type of traumatic background and oftentimes don't seek out help because a part of the trauma is to ignore the signs of personal stress or inability to see the signs. For myself, the signs of me relapsing in a PTSD moment often begins with physical signs. I often don't recognize it until later down the road. I work in a field when I have to read crimes committed by youth, including sex offenses, and have to train and keep up to date with the issues our community faces, such as we previously talked about the CSEC community, the sexually exploited children, and the abuse and neglect. And just a little backstory on my personal history. I was originally born in South Korea and was placed in an orphanage at a young age. And yes, I mean legit orphanage with lice, visits from missionaries, all the above. Not quite as destitute as the Annie Orphan movie depiction, but not the best either. Mm-hmm. And I was subjected to abuse and neglect from both my biological family and from the orphanage, and even experienced sexual abuse when I was brought to the U.S. And being a social worker, I can be triggered often. And as I said before, I'm not the only one. We have a need to protect others and advocate for others because of the experiences that we have. And that's kind of how we began our career stance.
Right.
But that doesn't neglect the fact that we have trauma in our own selves and on our own past, and it causes a lot of issues in our daily lives.
Yeah, and as I've mentioned before, I'm so thrilled I got put on the show as an intern, but the reason I got put on it was because I was the only woman. And I was triggered all the time, and I didn't know what to do about it, and I developed what I call the callus. So now people ask me, like, well, how do you do this job? I have this very extensive callus. Right.
And that's a common question for me as well. How do you do the job? I couldn't do this if I were you, blah, 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 blah. And it's true. I understand some people are not able to do it. Honestly, I kind of wish I didn't have to do it. And I kind of wish I didn't experience some of the things. Who wants to go through these things?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I agree with that callus. You have to move on. And I will say social workers have some of the most obscene sense of humors because we have to in order to cope with some of the things that we see.
Yeah, I understand. Another type of trauma is temporary trauma or acute trauma, which is what occurs after a single event, like a car accident or a hurricane. There's chronic trauma, repeated traumatic events that occur over a long period of time, like ongoing abuse or neglect. And then there is complex trauma. There are four components to complex trauma. One, it begins in childhood. That, two, continues over time. And three, frequently takes place in a caregiving relationship where the caretaker is the threat or, for a variety of reasons, cannot support, nurture, or protect the child from the threat that results in four immediate and long-term impacts that manifest in many ways. Then there's historical trauma, which is collective, cumulative trauma experienced by a particular group, like slavery or colonization, homophobia. There's racial trauma, racial harassment, and experiencing or witnessing racial violence. All of these deserve their own episodes. I want to bring in people to talk about that.
Right.
There's re-traumatization. This is conscious or unconscious reminder of past trauma that leads to re-experiencing the traumatic event. And we're going to talk about that more in this episode, but in the era of hashtag Me Too, this is everywhere.
Right. And let's just remind that it may not just be one specific thing. There's several forms of trauma, and you may be suffering, or an individual may be suffering from several of these categories.
Yeah.
And sometimes this makes it even more difficult to try to diagnose. But we'll get into that later on.
Yes. And I did want to note there's also physical trauma, which is broken bones, severe burns, but that's not really what we're talking about today. I did want to mention it, but it's not what we're really diving
right.
into.
And just to put it out there, physical trauma can lead to self-harming and violent outbursts in physical forms. So there are definitely reactive things to what we feel, and that could be the severity of abuse, physical abuse, which kind of can follow into repeat abuse of yourself, because this is what you know as a form of a punishment or a disciplinary action. That's a long story, and again, we're not going to go into that, but it definitely has occurred.
Right, and it can also be perhaps related to other forms of trauma. Maybe you are experiencing physical trauma as a result of abuse, and again, you can have more than one of these traumas. So let's look at some stats. Like we said, a lot of stats around PTSD, which is, as the name suggests, post-traumatic stress disorder, a big part of this. A lot of those numbers are based on veterans and people who have served in the Army. But each year, the Department of Veterans Affairs estimates 5.2 million people suffer post-traumatic stress disorder, and 78% of the population will experience PTSD. 7 to 8%. That probably sounded like 78. 7 to 8, which, as the name implies, this is very common if you've gone through any kind of traumatic event. Women are more likely to develop PTSD than men. Women with four or more PTSD symptoms develop cardiovascular disease at 60% or higher. And that just is to reinforce that this is a physical, it impacts you physically, mentally. It has all this reach that I think we forget about.
Right. And just to put it out there again, with the Department of Veterans Affairs, they had to have their own individual department because of the vast amounts of PTSD that was happening from wars, from training even, that was that severe. And honestly, because it is a group and a collective, it was easier to gather evidence to see exactly how or what they were suffering from. So that is why this exists. And we know many, many people in the military and the things that they have to go through in order to become a part of a unit that fights together is a breaking down of themselves as an individual.
Yeah.
So that has a whole lot of, again, this is also another podcast,
right,
which Annie, I'm glad to do. I'll be back. I'm just saying. But
yes,
it is more and more information. And this is how it's kind of trickled down as we look at trauma and what trauma looks like and how that affects into the individual common people, I guess. What is it?
The common
folks. What is that when they're not?
They're not military.
Yeah.
They're not military.
Civilians.
They're civilians.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry, Andrew. You are going to have a lot of work to do.
So untreated trauma-related alcohol and drug abuse cost $161 billion in 2000 alone. So not only is this a mental and physical problem, but it's an economic problem if we want to look at it that way, because that's the only way our country likes to take things seriously.
Honestly, me being in the juvenile justice system, we see this as a thing. We actually have to go back and look what is the most cost-effective treatment. And just detaining kids who probably have some type of mental health diagnosis, because this is what we are seeing more and more of, and it's now becoming more apparent that it is trauma-related.
Yeah.
That we are understanding, oh my goodness, this is costing us so much money for not treating it. Because a lot of this could be preventative. And when I say preventative, not the trauma part, but before they hit an end point where they have complete destruction.
Yeah.
Whether it's physical destruction of themselves or their community. But once you start looking at the fiscal cost of it, it is better to treat and to recognize and diagnose at an early stage.
Yeah, and I've mentioned before, I have a wonderful friend who is a traveling nurse. And actually, when I mentioned that we were doing this and that I had this friend that was a social worker and she was coming on the podcast with me, she wanted to meet you because she said that that has become a part of her job that she did not expect, that a lot of times people come in to, because she works in the emergency room, and they have some kind of trauma or mental issue that she's not trained to deal with, but she is expected to deal with.
Right.
And I think it illustrates that this is a really big problem that we're not treating.
Right. It's a health problem. That's exactly what it comes down to, because whether or not you want to admit it, mental health affects your physical health, which is why we have to have this conversation of, in the end, if you don't treat yourself, as you told in the quote, it does come back to haunt you.
Yeah. You can't outrun it forever. And 25% of people in the United States experience trauma before the age of 16. That's one of four, 25%. In some places, the number is higher. Some places that I read, closer to 60. This is probably something that is underreported.
Right.
So,
and you got to also remember metro areas versus suburbs.
Yeah.
This is what I've seen working in Georgia, and my focus is within the metro area, Atlanta, Fulton County, Clayton County, versus being out in LAJ, Georgia, which is where I'm from, or where I was raised. Get all the apples in the mountains.
Yeah.
Which is a little different because the level of violence that you see, the level of gang activity that you see are lower in suburban areas than is in the actual city parts.
Right. Those city parts for us city folk.
And apparently, I'm still from LJ because y'all city folks. Y'all just stay there.
That sounds like how my family talks about me. So I think
you're
tapping into something.
This is my LJ coming out. And eventually, you'll hear so much more.
Do you think that I'm a city folk, Samantha?
I do. That's because you also dress up in costumes that I don't understand and celebrate this weeks at a time.
Costumes. She means I put on clothes, but I also put on costumes.
No, I'm talking about costumes. I'm talking about the Spider-Man costume.
I just bring up the Spider-Man
costume.
I'm just saying,
that's a city folk thing.
That's fair. That is a fair point. If we look at LGBTQI folks, LGBTQI youth experience trauma at a higher rate than their straight counterparts, resulting from things like assault, harassment, bullying, intimate partner violence, physical and sexual abuse, and social stigma, bias, and rejection. Politics. You can also look at the intersection of like something like the shooting in Orlando, which is traumatic on multiple levels.
And I'll add with the intimate partner violence, it is probably one of the least reported because you oftentimes have a confusion of, well, can you hurt each other? You're both female. You're both male. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's oftentimes underreported, like I said before, and or not even considered partner violence.
Yes.
And more dismissed.
Yes. Recently, I was researching consent for a different episode, and I was reading stories about women who were saying that they had been essentially assaulted by a female partner, and the police show up and they're like, that's not possible.
Exactly. It's kind of back to the point of, first of all, the LGBTQI community are not regarded as full citizens, which is ridiculous in itself. And then you start looking at the stereotypes in which police and a lot of other people start heavily leaning on instead of seeing it for what it is, which is, yes, this is, if they're partners, And if there one person is showing dominance over another in a violent manner, that is an abusive relationship.
Yeah, and another problem that plays into that that we don't have time to delve into right now, but is laws, because right now rape is defined as pretty much penetrative sex with a penis and a vagina, vaginal sex. But this is so glossed over because our laws are not there and because we don't, like you said, people of the LGBTQI community are treated as second class. Compared to heteronormative and cisgendered folks, they are at 1.6 to 3.9 times more likely to develop PTSD.
That's very specific numbers.
Yeah. And I've said a million times, not a million, but a lot on this show, that there is not enough research that is outside of our heteronormative realm.
Right.
And so I'm happy there is research around this, but it is new and it's ongoing. So I'm glad that it exists. I want it to continue to exist and to grow and expand. But normally I can't find any numbers around this stuff. So I'm just glad, even if they're depressing numbers, I'm glad that we're looking into it.
The more you know.
The more you know, indeed. We have some more of this discussion around trauma, but first we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So what does trauma look like? It can manifest in a lot of ways and look like a lot of different things depending on the person and the event. Sometimes the symptoms are unnoticeable, even to the person experiencing it and the person's friends and family. All of these that we're about to discuss take place over the short or long term, which long term could be lasting years and years and years. Long term effects are generally more severe. the sooner someone is able to get help, the better when it comes to successful treatment.
Correct. And I would say with that, you have to remember, again, trauma has been fairly new. And so, therefore, people don't even recognize it as its own entity. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we'll say, oh, she's just having an episode. It'd be dismissed fairly regularly, and or, oh, I'm just sad, and or, oh, I just feel down today, or I'm overly anxious. It is misdiagnosed in our own selves, and we don't understand what is happening. So even though this has been around forever and ever, the idea of trauma-informed whatever, however, whether it's therapy, trauma-informed treatments, trauma-informed diagnosis, it is new. Yes, and when we start hearing back from families of like, oh, you start looking back and you're like, oh, okay, that's what that was. Mm-hmm. It is. It's definitely a newer way of looking at what we're going through and the severity of what it is.
Yeah, and I feel like kind of related to that is this idea that you'll just get over it. Like it's a passing thing. You're sad right now.
Right.
But you'll get over it. I feel like that's how our society has been around this for a while. And I don't want to speak for other countries, but I have traveled a lot, and I can say in those other countries, I saw a similar thing where it was like, you don't get therapy. Like, you don't admit that you have some kind of mental problem or, like, thing that you have to work through. And I'm hoping that we're moving away from that.
Right. I think that's something, again, this could be a whole different episode about therapy and treatment and destigmatizing what that is and why we need it. Because as a social worker, we often talk about the fact everyone needs therapy, whether you want to admit it or not, whether it's because your mother was too clingy or whether it's because...
she wasn't clingy enough.
Right. Either one of those things. It is something that you need to deal with because it does affect you. And who doesn't want to be better in their lives? Because oftentimes when you correct yourself, you're able to give more. It's absolutely loving yourself and being able to love others. I know like a St. Augustine quote is love and do as you please. Mm-hmm. And it essentially is for you too. Literally that if you love something or someone, you want the best for them. That goes for yourself.
Yeah. And I've said before on this show, I have a friend in particular I'm thinking of, but my number one advice to her is that she needs to become okay with herself because she's always seeking someone, usually a man, usually a relationship, to make her happy, but she's so miserable by herself. And to me, you need to become okay with yourself and then you'll be a whole person in a relationship. Like you complete me, that's a lie. Like that's, you need to complete yourself and that person needs to complete themselves and then you're compatible and then you're both living your own lives but also complementing each other.
Right.
This is a tangent. That's just my belief.
No, I was going to say, just going back into the trauma part, this is why treatment is important.
Yes.
This is why being able to recognize it is important and this is why having a plan is important.
It is. And a little while back, we had an episode all about horror movies called Why Didn't You Believe Her? But this next bit is related to that. In the immediate aftermath of a traumatic event, someone might appear shaken or disoriented, and they might appear withdrawn, or they might refuse to speak. They might not remember key details, or they may remember inaccurately, or they might remember seemingly random details very vividly. And we talked about this a little bit in past episodes of how that can look like two police officers responding as being cold or playing into the idea that someone, typically in this case, someone who has experienced sexual assault is, quote, faking it. They aren't the emotional mess that police or responders are expecting.
Yeah, and to add in there, memory repression due to traumatic events are actually more common than people know. Dissociative amnesia and inability to recall autobiographical information. This could be specific to an event, selective, or overall generic in terms of identity or of life's history. There are many events that I still can't remember, but experience a lot of PTSD moments due to, let's say, smell, taste, or even emotion without actual link to an event. And you have to remember, memory repression and suppression could be a defensive tactic.
Yes.
And I think that's what we don't understand when we inaccurately remember things is not because we're trying to falsify information. It's because our mind is trying to protect from something that you can't handle.
Yeah. And we're going to get into some of the science around that. And from personal experience, I can say, yes, I remember the weirdest things very vividly, specifically what I was wearing. I remember what I was wearing in like every occasion. Some other things, important things, I don't know. But I remember what I was wearing.
And that could have everything to do with, again, you protecting yourself and focusing on something insignificant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something like anything to take your mind off of this horrible event that's happening.
Right.
One of the key hallmarks of trauma is anxiety. That's a big one. It can display in a lot of different ways: mood swings, night terrors, edginess, irritability, and inability to concentrate. Those are just some of the identifiers of anxiety. There's a lot more. Emotional responses are one of the most common ways trauma manifests. So you got anger, depression. Depression and trauma have very high rates of comorbidity. Depression is a long-lasting malaise or feelings of despair or sadness, lack of interest. I know a lot of you probably know what it is, but just to be clear, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs, rates of depression occur 3 to 5 times more often among those that have experienced trauma and PTSD as compared to those that haven't.
Honestly, this is one of my go-to emotions after being triggered, and sometimes I don't even recognize it until after a certain amount of time. I've gotten a lot better at recognizing my own physical signs and have to put in action for myself to protect myself and to make sure that I'm okay.
Yeah, and that's something I think is very key, is learning in yourself these things that are triggering and what it does, and then having a plan in place. That's something that I've had to learn and has been very helpful for me. Denial is a big thing. Feelings of intense helplessness, low self-esteem, emotional outbursts, particularly towards friends and family. This often results in pushing away those that can help you. And then guilt, blame, and survivor's guilt particularly.
Specifically talking about survivor guilt, if you look at family and friends of perpetrators, example, R. Kelly's daughter, who just recently posted a pretty intense post regarding her relationship with her father, R. Kelly. And let's go ahead and say and make this clear. It is not the fault of the people connected to the perpetrators. And oftentimes they are victim as well. Yeah. We need to be sure to remember that, because they are also probably going through some type of trauma, whether or not you want to believe it. But oftentimes this is part of the survivor guilt, or not necessarily survivor guilt, but just guilt in general. And I will say part of the reason I am a social worker is due to my survivor's guilt. And I feel the need to advocate and help others, because I was able to survive such a horrible incident that I want to make sure that other kids can do so. And I think it's really important that we advocate for those who can't for themselves. And as you know, while you were being victimized, you weren't really able to advocate for yourself because you're trying to figure out what was happening in your life at that point in time.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason we're doing this. and we're going to return to survivor's guilt in a future episode, because it is a big part of this whole arc that we're talking about. But if we look at physical responses, there are a lot. Weight loss, weight gain, headaches, stomach pain or indigestion, frequent crying, aches and pains, muscle tension. A lot of listeners have written in and said they've had to go to physical therapy for PTSD, essentially, because they're so tense. A loss of sleep, paleness, lethargy, fatigue, loss of energy, inability to socialize, poor concentration, anxiety or panic attacks like racing heartbeat, inability to cope. These are things that are going to impact how you can contribute to society and how just happy and well you can be as a person.
And also, as a reminder, these physical signs may be what you notice before anything else.
Yes.
So if you do see some of these signs, you need to look back and see what may have caused this. Mm-hmm. Because exactly like the whole stiffness thing, my shoulders and my neck went out when I was at the Family and Children's Services, because I had an incident that triggered me and I was losing sleep and I was having the secondary trauma, and I literally could not move my neck for a good 2 days. I still had to work, and I did, but it was probably one of the most painful experiences that I had, and it was absolutely due to the trauma that I was not addressing.
Yeah, And I have recently come to the conclusion that that is part of why I went to physical therapy for like 3 years and I got better, but it was still not, it didn't go away. And it was basically because they told me, you can't relax.
Right.
Relax. And to me, I was relaxing, but I'm just tense all the time. Another part of this conversation is suicidal ideation. And I want to include in here, we're going to come back to this in a future episode. But LGBTQI folks are 3 times more likely to contemplate suicide and 5 times more likely to attempt it when compared to heterosexual people. That is horrifying. And also, we're going to come back to that.
And again, this goes hand in hand with depression and anxiety.
Yes.
Suicidal ideation often comes together with that. So that's something to think on when you start trying to evaluate your emotions and your mental health as well.
Yes. And then if we look specifically at PTSD, CPTSD, secondary PTSD, all those PTSDs, the most common response to trauma is post-traumatic stress disorder. And again, we have a whole episode, CPTSD, that you can see for more. But for a rundown of symptoms from the APA, it includes 1, recollections of the traumatic event occur recurrently and include images, thoughts, and perceptions. In children, play may take place in which themes or aspects of the incident are expressed. Nightmares often regularly and involve images or impressions of the traumatic event. Oh my God, yes. I went through that so much. Flashbacks happen, or situations in which the person acts or feels as if the traumatic event were happening all over again. This may include hallucinations and dissociative events, including those that occur on waking or while intoxicated.
And with that, we can actually talk about self-medication and why people do it often because of those vivid flashbacks.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that a bit more. But first, we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Like we said, it was like $161 billion, I think. That's a lot.
Right.
People self-medicating to deal with stuff like this. Number four is pronounce psychological distress at exposure to cues, internal or external, that may be taken to symbolize or to resemble some aspect of the traumatic event.
Yeah, as I spoke about earlier, I have moments of panic from perceived threats that aren't actually threats. One example would be while I was in an elevator in college, UGA, I was boxed in by several men. And other than being loud and obnoxious, they really weren't doing anything wrong. But I began to panic and had an anxiety attack due to being triggered from the events from my times in the orphanage with groups of men. And it took me a while to realize exactly why I had no control over my emotions or reactions to that moment. I didn't understand what I was going through at that time. I'm a pretty strong individual, and I kind of rely on that. Mm-hmm. I'm what they call sassy for all intent purposes.
I would agree.
I'm sassy. but when it comes to moments of being threatened or triggered, I become almost shut down, and yeah. I become quiet, and I don't know how to react, and I go into a panic mode. And for me, panic mode is to stand still. Mm-hmm. Like the fight, flight, or freeze.
Yeah.
I freeze. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, and it's not the best reaction, but that's what I've learned, trying to be invisible. And honestly, that causes such a panic attack for me. And moments like that where I'm like, oh my gosh, there's actually nothing wrong, but I feel at any moment it could turn, and it begins to grow inside of me, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And then blank.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something I think we'll probably return to, but for me, I often get told, not to brag, but I often get told I'm a very strong person.
This is why I like you.
But then if something triggers me and I feel like I am a fake, essentially, it's like a weird imposter syndrome.
It is. It's a whole circular pattern where you know you have grown to this person to be strong and independent, and then you feel a moment of weakness because of the traumas that have happened in your life, and then you feel like, oh my gosh, why didn't I do better? And you start kicking yourself, and you start feeling guilty for not defending yourself, because in your mind, you should have done A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
But that's not how that works.
It shouldn't have impacted you that way.
That's not how that works.
It's not. And I've come around to that, but it is something that I've recognized. It's like, I shouldn't feel weak for this. PTSD can be acute, ongoing, or chronic, like complex PTSD, CPTSD. For severe, short-lived symptoms, usually displaying immediately after an event, that might be acute stress disorder, or ASD. And if we're looking at kids specifically, some of the symptoms might include wetting the bed after having learned to use the toilet, forgetting how to or being unable to talk, acting out scary event during playtime, the scary event.
Yeah, I have many cases where children reenact the events on other children, whether out of confusion or sometimes out of anger. I've also had children use their own trauma as excuses to harm others. So this is more significant than you know, and I don't think people quite understand that level, because I have encountered more and more child-on-child victimization. Uh-huh. And it's kind of a new phenomenon, whether you want to talk about early sexualization due to pornography or abuse. But it has been more and more where I see during the playtimes where playing doctor, quote-unquote, has become a more extreme violation.
Mm-hmm. And while we were researching this, you were there, Samantha.
I was.
I had a sudden memory of I when I was a kid, I had this terrifying imaginary friend that tormented me, and he followed me, and like my parents knew his name. His name was Vinegar. He smelled like vinegar. My friends knew his name. He was a big part of my life until I remember the exact date he went away, because it's related to Harry Potter, and all of my memories are related to Harry Potter. But I now think that it was just me trying to deal with this trauma that I was going through.
And honestly, that could be the same dissociative identity disorder. Mm-hmm. And why that happens, oftentimes it is goes hand in hand with severe trauma from an early age. And therefore, the protection is bring on a new personality that can handle it or protect you from this. And you can forget about these awful moments.
Yeah. And it was easier to be like, oh, there's this weird ghost that's tormenting me.
Yeah, yours is a ghost. I've had imaginary friends, but yours was a ghost. That's pretty significant. And that it was an old man that smelled like vinegar.
Yeah, he looked like Nosferatu, if anyone wants an image in their head.
Oh, my goodness.
he was terrifying.
That is terrifying.
He was really scary.
How did you sleep?
I very much did it.
Very, very intense. Yes.
Yes, Vinegar. Okay, so going back to symptoms you can recognize in kids, another is being unusually clingy with a parent or other adult.
And honestly, we could go down the rabbit hole of diagnosing children with attachment issues due to neglect and abuse and how it impacts their reaction to strangers and friends. But it's something I definitely use to evaluate children who have had many issues in the judicial system. So kids that come back getting in trouble, there are oftentimes a reason for that, which is why I do what I do, which is to try to find treatment. But you can look and see the attachments to adulthood, to adults and to friends, and why they may react to something. And this kind of also goes hand in hand what we previously talked about with gang activity. Yeah. And why, when we talked about the whole grooming, why they seek others and why these are really, really important things about being clingy or not clingy enough.
Yeah. And I just wanted to put in here, going off of what you said earlier about misdiagnosis, a report in The Atlantic found that childhood trauma may be misdiagnosed as ADHD in children and often is.
Right. Any of those things have often been misdiagnosed when it could have been trauma and the way they react to things now. And as we know now, a child's mind doesn't get developed until their 20s.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Yeah.
And I say child, but, you know, they're obviously teenagers as well. But that's a whole other conversation about, do they truly understand? Is this really a true diagnosis? Because they do change as they grow older. Mm-hmm. The idea that ADHD, ADD can be, they can grow out of that, actually has occurred, and it can, which is why medication management is important. But that's a whole, again, another rabbit hole.
We're coming up with a million podcast ideas.
I'm never leaving. I'm going to keep talking.
But talking about diagnosis, in order to diagnose, the National Institute of Mental Health, or the NIHM, has this criteria for PTSD. At least three avoidance symptoms, and these are avoiding places, people, objects, or events. As I've said, I am a pro at this. I don't know whether to feel proud or scared, but I am amazing at this.
I love staying away from people.
Not me, though. At least two hyperarousal symptoms, being easily startled, which I am the easiest person to startle, feeling tense or on edge, difficulty sleeping, and outbursts of anger. These are pretty much constant. At least one re-experiencing symptom, like flashbacks, bad dreams, or frightening thoughts. These are usually triggered by something. And note about flashbacks, because a lot of you wrote in about them when we did our CPTSD episode. They're not necessarily what you've seen in the media. They can be, but smells, lighting, sounds, all kinds of things can trigger flashbacks. I have a song I live in fear of. Guaranteed I will flashback if I hear it. Luckily, it's very rare. But one day, I bet you I'm going to hear it in public or like knocking on a door. That's a big one. Don't do it. I mean, I need a sign. No knocking.
I'll never knock on your door.
Thank you. Oh, you can, but like, I have to know you're coming. If it's a surprise knock, no good.
Well, just like the last time I hung out with you, I just made you come out in your pajamas. So that's exactly what I'm going to do again.
She did. And it was pretty great. But a lot of times you can't predict what's going to set off a flashback. Like I said, Moana set me off pretty good the first time I saw it. And I can tell you, at least six listeners wrote in and said it set them off too.
You know, I actually had the same experience with Meet the Robinsons.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
That was this movie about this kid trying to find forever parents. And it goes back to how that happened. Mm-hmm. But that also created this whole fear of rejection and all of the trauma. And I was hanging out with the kids I was nannying at the time. So that was super fun.
Oh, geez. I'm sorry.
It's a good movie, though.
I know. Moana's a good movie, too. I like rush to assert I love it. I wasn't expecting to get triggered by it.
Right, right.
And another thing is, I used to, when I would get flashbacks, I would squeeze my upper arms. Sometimes I would press against my face with the heel of my hand to try and stave off the flashback. And I would leave these bruises. I would look a horrible mess. And people thought I was taking karate or something like that, or that I was being abused by my boyfriend. And I include that because, again, he was a wonderful guy, but damn, did that annoy him.
Right. I experienced similar things, but it's more of like deep scratches and cutting my hand, as well as scratching myself in my head, on my head, until I bled. And these are usually easy signs to read. And I knew I had to reach out for help because, for me, this could be the beginning of my self-harming slash suicidal ideation. I definitely know when I start harming myself, I'm going down this route. But it definitely is one of the bigger things where you recognize, oh my gosh, I can't hold it in, so how do I outwardly stop this? And you know what? It could also be said to, like, eating disorders. It is also a physical form of triggering.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to include in here this side note. So I would have all of these bruises on my arms and on my face, and I can't believe how many men felt comfortable enough to come up to me and say something along the lines of, I see you like rough sex, so do I, we should hook up, or I see you like it rough, huh?
Which is beyond upsetting. It is infuriating to think that men have the right to even come up to you to say any of those things. And I feel like at this point, you have the right to punch them in the balls. I mean, if you really want to answer the question, I'm like, no, not necessarily, but if you like it,
really
I'll help you out. I'll help you out. I mean, this is such an absurd... When you told me this, I think my mouth literally opened because I was like, men... Maybe I'm just really, really scary to men, which I hope so to a certain extent. I cannot believe they would have the audacity to even ask you that. Who thinks that's a joke?
Yeah. Or like a come on line.
Right. Yes. Oh, yes, I do. Please, let's go on a date.
Yeah. It happened a lot. It happened enough where I was like, this is a thing. Wow.
This is where I'm like, ugh, men. And please know I don't think that really, but those moments are like, why?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely was pretty upset about that whole thing.
As you should be, as anyone should be, as everyone should be. Unless you're in an S&M club and or you're in a relationship where you've already agreed to that, no.
Yeah, don't come up to me about that. So all of these, another thing about PTSD is like symptoms that interfere with activities of daily life, such as being with friends, performing important tasks, or going to work or school.
I've had episodes of flashbacks due to work conferences, which had me unable to leave home for days and even weeks at a time. I finally had to make a plan for myself on how to overcome all of it, but it took years of therapy to admit how detrimental it was for me to isolate myself at these times. But that was my only recourse at that point. Being alone meant I was safe from all the entities that could get me, essentially.
Yeah, and having a plan, like we said, that is such a useful tool if this is something you're dealing with. If we look at memory, when it comes to repressed memories or suppressed memories or recovered memories, the science is still out.
And we can talk about the Kern County sex abuse case where psychologists were able to, quote-unquote, recover memories, and they were false memories that convicted several people of abuse, which has now caused disruption in trying to use this within court systems because it's not reliable.
Right. And I'm not sure where this falls, but I have experience with a pretty weird memory thing that I think is self-defense. It's not like I forgot things necessarily, but it's like I actively did not remember them. It's a really hard feeling to describe. Once my mom was apologizing for something traumatic that had happened to me, And I didn't know what she was talking about at first. But then it all came back when she kind of expounded on it. And it was like it had been there all along. But I was just looking anywhere else but there. It was very surreal and dreamlike. And I actually wrote a diary entry about it when I was in high school. And here is a quote from it. "I have the strangest feeling that I have forgotten something major. Not just something either, but a lot of somethings. Pieces of my life are coming back to me like faded memories or dreams. And I'm so shocked to have forgotten, it literally takes my breath away. It's as if I'm in a scene in a horror movie right before everything falls into place and you understand finally what has eluded you this whole time. These were once foundational to my everyday life. This was who I was. This was what I was made of. And I forgot. As if I was brainwashed, as if I was a different person, a person whose life I stumbled on while flipping through television stations one day and left on because of passing interest, but promptly put out of my brain. But it was there all along in the back of my mind, feeding on insecurity, waiting to reemerge. I know this sounds weird. It is weird. I have no idea what is going on. These memories, they're the huge kind. They're the kind that haunt you and shape you, that hang off your back like a shadow, that weigh on you until all you want to do is hide under a bed and pretend you don't exist. They're the kind that make you question what kind of person you are for forgetting them. They're the kind that make you feel like you are in a horror movie, that make you afraid of what else you have buried in your brain, lying in wait. If it will destroy you, if you remember. I've been waking up in a panic, but when I try to remember what it was that frightened me, I can't. It's there, but it's as if my mind won't let me, as if it knows it will destroy me, and I am scared. At any moment, I could be reduced to an incoherent, sobbing mess, and I don't know how to prepare for it. I don't think I can prepare for it."
Dang, girl.
Yeah, that was a high school diary entry. And I think it's pretty, that pretty much describes my, how my memory worked around a lot of the trauma I went through and this fear I had, because I knew it was there.
Right.
And it could attack at any moment. And I didn't know how to prepare for it. I didn't know how to protect myself from it. And also, we're going to be doing a whole episode on therapy. But a note here, the first time I went to therapy, because it can be re-traumatizing, I was trying to describe something that I'd gone through and I couldn't do it, like literally physically couldn't do it. Every time I tried, I couldn't find the words, and I could visualize the event until I tried to describe it and it like magically disappeared.
Oh, I actually have similar experiences of feeling foggy. As in fact, we know that it's hard to correctly remember past events without evidence that comes along with it. And for me, I have no one to show me pictures or tell me stories of my childhood for the first 7 years of my life. I will continue to tell people how they were will talk about their childhood, and I will say, you know, at 5 years old, your mother, your father, your guardian probably had some pictures of your first days of school, whether your first Christmas, all of those things. And I don't have any records of me before 7 years old because I was placed in an orphanage, and a majority of those things didn't come with me. And honestly, it probably is a good thing. But for me, what I have are vague memories and dreams that sometimes seem to haunt me, as in fact, my memories seem to be severely damaged to the point I can't even speak my native language, even though it's the only language I could speak until I was seven. I mean, I literally could not communicate with my family when I was adopted for the first 6 months of our lives. It literally was just crying and pointing at things. Which I can't quite remember all of that, but I know it had to be real fun for everyone. And now I have a bit of a Southern accent, so you're welcome to that. But even though all of these things happened, I decided, you know what? I want to conquer this. I want to take on my ethnicity. I want to know more about my culture, who I was. And I took a Korean course for 3 semesters in college. And I was the second worst in that class. And that was at the point in time that when I learned the phrase fresh off the boat,
right,
or a fob, mm-hmm, and B, being whitewashed, which is what I am. Essentially, the idea that I am a Korean that has been inundated in the white American U.S. culture. And therefore, I am no longer regarded as a true Korean, which that's a whole issue in itself. But for me, none of these actually help. And everything is kind of a fog, and to the point that I cannot learn, even with me doing Duolingo, any of the programs, I cannot remember Korean to a detriment. And I even asked a psychologist, what do you think this is? And they could not really explain to me other than you have a defense mechanism right now that's not allowing you to remember because of the trauma that you endured.
Yeah. And that's how powerful it is. And in terms of recalling things inaccurately, there is research supporting that. And it has to do with your brain focusing on certain things and not others in a survival situation. The part of our brain involved with focusing on things can essentially get shut down by stress chemicals during a stressful or traumatic event. And what that means is you're less able to focus, you're less able to make sense of things, and therefore you're less able to recall things in a way that makes sense. The amygdala, responsible for the fear response, steps in and takes the reins when it comes to where your attention goes. And this might mean your brain focuses on a small but terrifying detail or a minor detail in order to distract and detach. Like I said, I can specifically remember what I was wearing very vividly in a lot of my traumatic memories. Specific unconnected images, sensations, probably out of sequence, which is not good when you're in court testifying.
Right. And we just discussed the fact that I have such foggy memories and inability to actually learn my own native language due to some of the trauma. I also struggle with the past traumas in dreams. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was really, really young, and they actually still stick with me, specific dreams of me being locked out of the home for over 24 hours and being attacked by a dog, having a memory of being abandoned in the woods, which I'm pretty sure that was not true because I was in a basket, so I don't think that one was true. But I had to differentiate with, is this real, isn't this real, what happened? I had an incident in which I was stabbed in the knee by another orphan girl who went through a manic moment, which caused me trauma as well. I had many things that happened that I cannot actually differentiate. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to organize. So it's just kind of a big blur. Yeah. And trying to figure those out has been fairly traumatic in itself. And I will say, for me, trying to get past it or trying to bring it back up, I have tried different therapies and trying to get connected back to those, because I think part of my frustration is not knowing.
Yeah.
Which I know for a lot of victims, that's kind of the same thing for them. I think I'm constantly haunted by emotions. Mm-hmm. So I know you and I talked about the fact that I get triggered by emotions, whether it's if I feel like someone's disapproving of me, it triggers me into a spiral in which I cannot communicate with people. I kind of go into a fetal position and have to go home, because that realization of being disapproved, not wanted, rejected, has been a huge fear factor for me. It has been something that actually will stop me from doing something better, doing something new, or trying something new. And as in fact, when we talk about the fact this hurts testimony.
Yeah.
I had an incident when I actually came into the U.S. where I was victimized at a public pool. And I actually got contacted by a woman recently from my same town who had heard my story somehow and reached out to me and said that similar thing had happened to her. And this man was supposedly about to coach a swim team for kids. And honestly, I had to send back to her, I can't really help you, A, because I don't remember the man's name. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the time frame when it happened. And I can't exactly tell you all of the events that had happened inside of that. Mm-hmm. So me, who have been in the court system and have actually gone through watching a full case for child abuse, sex abuse, whatever, I knew that I would be more of a detriment to the case because of my lack of memory and inability to say actual names than anything else, that I had to say, I can't help you, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because the survivor in me is like, oh my gosh, we have to stop this.
Yeah.
But I know legally and rationally, I'm not a help.
Yeah.
Which is really frustrating in itself.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And in this age of Me Too and hearing about this all the time, it's hard to escape. It's right. hard to escape. So this brings us to the end of part one of our deep dive on drama. Sometimes when you make an outline, you're not sure how long the episode is going to be, but it quickly became apparent that this was going to be a two-parter. So look out next week for the second part, where we're going to talk about re-traumatization and resources and trauma-informed responses. And in the meantime, if you would like to email us, if you want any of those resources, please reach out. You can email us at momstuff@howstuffworks.com. You can find us on Instagram at Stuff Mom Never Told You and on Twitter at Mom Stuff Podcast. Thanks as always to our producer, Andrew Howard, and thanks to you for listening. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.